We'll make it work.
Love
Randy, do you think Jeff
is mine?
No.
God gave this land to me, this brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening and happy Shabbat. It's my pleasure to be here. Fortunately, we're here with both JB and Kirk. If we weren't here with JB and Kirk, we wouldn't be here. Because here in the Bahamas, Blog Talk Radio will not accept my call in as host, and therefore I cannot commence the show. Even though I'm called on the guest line, but JB is on the host line, and Kirk is going to do it on future programs as well as when JB is not here. Collectively, we're able to have a program, and that's good news. Happy Shabbat to one and all.
Happy Shabbat to you.
Happy Shabbat.
Hi, JB.
Okay.
We had jumped ahead in time, and as a result of doing that, we are dealing with a mizmor, a psalm, that makes irrefutable the claims that we have come to resolve regarding Dove. I heard this week that there are significant numbers of folks that are really unhappy, uncomfortable, what I'm saying. And in fact, there's a group out there that is saying, don't listen to Craig anything that he said after 2016, which I assume is the time that I began to follow Yahweh's words to Doug.
Mm-hmm.
David. The 89th Mizmor, which I translated and completed actually today, and now I have moved into proving the point that the 89th Mizmor makes about Paul, is emphatic. And so I'm here to tell you, if you don't like the fact that Yahweh has a Messiah, and his name is Dove, that Yahweh has a chosen one, and his name is Dove, that Yahweh has a king, and matter of fact, king of kings, and his name is Dove, that the set-apart one, which the Christian would call the Holy One of Yisrael, is Dove. The branch is Dove. The hand of God is Dove. Yahweh's shepherd is Dove. The person that's going to be eternally by Yahweh's right side is Dove. If you don't like it, take it up with God and see if you can change his mind.
Yeah.
So, long time ago, I was a very politically conservative evangelical Christian. I'm neither of those things anymore. because Yahweh introduced himself to me some time ago. And I listened to him, and I went where the words lead. This is where his words lead. They're irrefutable. God did not make transferable promises. The basis of replacement theology isn't this notion of the promises made to Israel have somehow, without any affirmation from Yahweh, been given to Goyim and Christians. Isn't where it began. It began with the worst human being who ever lived. The man that Yahweh not only calls the plague of death, but the father of lies and the son of evil. And his modus operandi was to rob Dode of everything that God gave to him and give it to this caricature that he had modeled after Dionysus that he called the Lord Jesus Christ, such that he could completely immunize Goyim from the antidote to Pauline Christianity. The antidote for Pauline Christianity, we figured out a long time ago, is Dode. Dode proves that the Torah says. Dode proves that you don't have to be perfect to be perfected by God. Dode proves that the path to Yahweh occurs in our brains. It is not a result of faith. Dode is the antithesis, the arch rival, the opponent of Paul. In fact, Christianity and Christians in general are dismissive of Dode because they say the guy is already complaining. You know, every read his Psalms, he's already whining about somebody. He's always frustrated, you know, that God needs to help him triumph over his opponent. Well, Dode found it easy to triumph over all of his temporal components. The opponent that has denigrated Dode is pulling Christianity. And that's why he is constantly fixated on exposing it and condemning it. I sent out today, and I don't expect anyone to have read it since I only sent it out an hour or so ago, the current status of the fourth chapter of the new book called Coming Home in Our Time. And it is an expose on the 89th Mizmor. And it concludes with a scathing repudiation of Paul. What we're going to do is we're going to go through it. Because, quite frankly, if there are members of the covenant, people who claim that they are part of the covenant family, who are uncomfortable embracing what Yahweh had to say about those, and who have to cling to Jesus Christ, even under a new moniker of Yosha, then you just need to step out of the way. I understand that religious myths are hard to let go. But frankly, this one is black and white. And it makes perfect sense. The moment you recognize who Yosha is, that he is the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, serving as the Pesach lamb, you realize that there is no chance that Yahweh is going to return with many men. There is no chance that God's going to make any promises to many men. You realize that there is absolutely no reason for him to aggrandize the diminished manifestation of himself. And that there is every reason for him to celebrate the prime objective. Yahweh created the universe and conceived life for Dode. To have a son, to enjoy building a family, to enjoy raising his children, and all of the experiences that you can enjoy when you lift up and engage with your children. Dote is the celebration, the living embodiment, the very reason that creation occurred in the first place. Of course, Yahweh is going to celebrate his life. Of course, he's going to take pride and pleasure in his relationship with Dote. Dote is exactly what Yahweh was seeking when he created the universe. Is he perfect? No. Does God love him? Absolutely. He is simply the best of us. The brightest, most articulate, wisest, and most correct man who ever lived. He's God's choice. His chosen one. The one he anointed as his Mashiach Messiah. The one he has appointed King of Kings. It isn't our job to second guess God and to say, no, you ought to have elevated Mini-Me to this role. Joshua. It's our job to come to understand why God made this decision. Why this man is so important to him and to us. And then share what we have learned once we come to understand. That's our purpose. Last time I checked, JB, you're a hell of a guy, but you didn't create the universe.
No,
I like you a lot, but the covenant is not yours. It isn't our job to determine what's important to God. It's our job to figure out what's important to God so that we can model our lives accordingly and we can speak truthfully. I don't give a damn that people don't like what they hear. I only care that what we know, what we come to understand, and what we say is consistent with what God has told us.
Yeah, we've always said one of the hardest parts in coming to know Yahweh is unlearning things. And some things are easier for people to unlearn than others. And it's funny to see, or not really funny, but it's interesting to see how so many people have just a different dividing line. You know, they can unlearn so much, then they get to Paul, and, you know, they can't unlearn that. Yeah, then
right.
You know, you got some people who can get past that, and they recognize Paul as false. But they're still so clinging to Yahusha that when you start talking about, you know, how little of a role he really plays, they can't unlearn that. Or they struggle to unlearn it. Yeah, some of them may come to eventually. But it's, yeah, that is the hardest thing, is overcoming what we've been taught all our lives. You know, this verse is speaking of Yahusha. Oh, well, yeah, okay, this makes sense. It seems like it is. Then you look at it and like, well, no, it's not really, because here, here, and here. They don't want to accept that because it's unlearning something that is so fundamentally instilled in them.
Yeah, I think everything you said is true. I think there's more to it than that. Now, a significant percentage, if not the majority, of those who have come to embrace the covenant and come to know Yahweh as a result of these programs and books, have learned through DNA testing that they are actually Yehuda.
Mm-hmm.
And this revelation that Dode is the Messiah, the Son of God, is very, very comforting and reassuring to them. But there is a significant percentage, and many of those are in revolt. That came out of Christianity. And for them, this is hard for them to even fathom. And what it means is that those that they thought they had an opportunity to bring into the covenant, that there is no choice. I've received 3 letters from really, really thoughtful, dedicated, devoted covenant members here. nicely saying the same thing. They listened to the interview that I did with Barry Farber, most interesting man in the world, and have read the most recent chapters and listened to the most recent shows here. And they have correctly surmised that had they first made contact now, rather than anywhere from 10 to 18 years ago when I began, that they probably would not be part of the covenant now. That what we are saying now is so extreme from where they had been, from where the world is, that it would not have resonated with them. Mm-hmm. That we have gone so far away from Christianity and from political correctness and from the mythos of who God is, that they don't know. If this would have caught their attention as it did so many years ago. I think one was Terry, your wife, Kirk.
Yeah, she said it would have been that. I think we still would have wanted to know. So I don't think that would have been our outcome. Our outcome would be the same as it is right now. But it would have been taking us a little while longer to, where is this going?
Yeah. By the way, I've responded to Terry very positive. I agree with it. This is not a criticism. It's a solid appreciation for where we are.
But
And I think she's right. And what I think is happening here is that we're moving further and further away from focusing on Gentiles, on people coming out of Christianity that were indoctrinated within Christian culture, and focusing more and more on secular, rational, thoughtful Jews. And that the only people this is going to appeal to are people with a very high capacity intellectually and desire to know Yahweh. Folks that aren't going to feel a tragic loss for giving up their Jesus Christ, for giving up their Hashem, for giving up their politics and patriotism and religion. But those things are going to wash off of them easily and naturally, and they're going to have this thirst for the truth. That's where we are today. Now, there is a possibility, guys, that because we have gone so far away from what we once were, to what Yahweh wants us to be, that maybe we will only serve to educate someone who will have a broader appeal.
Yeah.
Or may I suggest one other option?
Okay.
God has never been impressed with numbers. Doesn't care. He doesn't care if there are if Dode was the only person in Shamaim, if he was joined by Abraham and Sarah and Yishak and Jacob, and by a half a dozen other people, or if there are 10,000 or 20,000 or more people there. Doesn't care. It's not quantity, it's quality.
You think about it, the question is, what is the goal of these writings? Is it to be an introduction for everybody, or is it to continually grow and continually learn? You've used the phrase many times, familiarity sells. And, early on, what you were talking about and what we were discussing was not too different, than what people were used to. now it's moved to the point where it's not. If we wanted to be popular, you know, we could have continued to stay within that and tried to keep as close to that as possible, but we wanted to grow and come to know the truth. Yeah, there's a, I grew up, I'm a comic nerd growing up, and, you know, Stan Lee had a great quote. He talked about making a successful comic, you have to write every comic as though it's somebody's first. You know, that anyone can pick up this book and it's get into it. That's how you become popular. But that's not how you grow and expand. Exactly. We're trying to grow and expand ourselves and share what we grow and expand with others. We're not trying to be the intro level for everybody. And you know, if somebody is inspired by what we're doing to go do something like that and try and be that bridge, great. But you know, we're doing this to grow ourselves. That's the biggest benefit we get from it. Sharing it is just something we love to do.
You know, I was translating the 89th Mizmor, and it talks about Chedod being the chosen one. And then at the end of the chapter, I'm comparing what Paul had to say and his speech about Chedod to what Yahweh actually said in the citations that his he misappropriated. And one of the things that is in our face is that every relationship that we know about, Yahweh reached out to and chose the individuals who became part of his covenant before they reached out to him.
Yeah.
It is universal in what we know. I'm not saying it is impossible for somebody without God's intervention, without God reaching out and introducing himself, to come to know him. Obviously,
all the people he worked through, that was the case.
But of all the people, you know, I'm translating the prophet Yeshaya. What does it say? Yeah, well, you knew me when I was still in my mother's womb. What does Yirmiyah say? Yeah, well, you knew me and chose me when I was still in my mother's womb. What about Chedod? Did Chedod choose Yahweh, or did Yahweh say, bring that kid from Bethlehem?
Yeah, that's the
He's
one.
The one I chose.
Yep.
How did the conversation begin with Abraham? Did Abraham say, you know, I think I'm going to walk away from Babel, and I'm going to come to meet this God of Israel? No, Yahweh met him on the road. It is true with everyone. Did Moshe say, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to walk out of Egypt. And if I get out of Egypt, maybe I'll get to know God. No. Not only did God introduce himself to him, what was his reaction? No, I don't want to do that.
No, not me. You get someone else. I'm a little busy right now.
Anyway, but no, I don't want to do that. Now, what was interesting, and I think that Moshe is unique in this regard. Not totally unique. I know other examples of this. God didn't have any other options.
That's true, too.
Moshe was the only option. And God can't work alone. God cannot work alone. I know that sounds like I am being a nutcase and limiting what God can do. God was incapable of freeing
his very nature
from Israel on his own accord because it violated
be free will.
He created the universe.
It wouldn't be free will then.
He does.
It goes against his nature.
It isn't his nature. He created the universe to enjoy family, and if you don't work through the family, then you're being inconsistent, and God's incapable of being inconsistent.
So
and
you don't like
was the only person on the planet that God could use that it actually lived in, understood the nature of Egyptian religion, politics, militarism, and economics. That God didn't have to say, let me explain to you why I hate this place. All Yahweh had to do is to say, let me explain to you how I'm going to liberate my people from this place and what we're going to offer them. Moshe was the only person on the planet who knew what was going on, the mindset of Egypt, and yet it walked away from it. Abraham may have been the only person on the planet with whom he could have forged the covenant. Someone who grew up and understood the nature of Babylon and had walked away from it. Noah may have been the only guy on the planet that Yahweh could use to build the ark. Someone living in the region who wasn't part of the religious and political and violent nature of human society. You know, I think, and if I'm being presumptive here, then woe to me. But I think that the job that I got of exposing Islam and then exposing Christianity and then translating and commenting on Yahweh's Torah and trying to elevate his people, calling his people out of Babylon, wasn't just by default, but because I was uniquely prepared to accomplish the mission that he wanted.
Yes.
The fact is that God chooses who he wants to have a relationship with. No predestination here. We are absolutely capable of making up our own decisions. Now, it is true that when God is in a situation where he wants to accomplish something, and the person that is qualified to do it with him is reluctant, there's no bad room for
him. He negotiates.
He will. He's not going to compromise anything that is part of his nature, but he's clever. You know, he'll work with that person until they have talked themselves in a circle and got nothing else to offer, nothing else to object to. You know? Okay. Dummy, you don't know me, and I've asked you to do a job. You've got a pretty good idea of who I am. What's it going to take for you to do this job? I spew it out. He says, reach into your pocket. Okay, that was impressive. Or the 91st Psalm. I get it. That was impressive. I don't have any more objections. Nor did Moshe. So since God introduces himself to those he did, and it's, there are times where God's trying to accomplish something that there are people uniquely positioned to do the work he wants done. But lots of times, I think he chooses people because they're fun. Because they think like him. Because they're mentally tuned in to his perspective and the thrill of learning. There's a woman that's listening to this program tonight that has taken the books that I've written, bought the hardbacks of them, and underlined every theme and every important point and dog-eared the pages and written notes on it such that the translations are part of her life, part of her husband's life, part of her children's life. What they were written for. It's easy to see why Yahweh would say, I want you to be part of my family. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to introduce myself. The rest is up to you. You can choose to go where the words lead, or you can choose to rebel and reject them or ignore them. It's your call. So when we come to realize that, in fact, I had a person wrote me the other day and said, you know, aren't you concerned that you're violating the Shabbat when you do the show on the Shabbat and you translate on the Shabbat? And, you know, last Shabbat, I missed the entire show because I was in the midst of translating Mizmor 89 and I was so enamored with what I was learning, I didn't know what day of the week it was. You know, the last week, on average, I worked 16 hours a day sitting in this chair, translating and writing commentary, to the point that I've got a heating pad on my back because the pain that is associated with doing that for that long is almost excruciating. But I can't help it.
You need to get you one of those reclining chairs that has the monitors built around and the keyboard tray. so you can just lay back and do it.
Yeah, I think so. I need
as much as you do, it'd be a good investment.
Yeah, a hologram monitor and to do it. But, you know, I think there's actually reasons why pain is good. Really focuses us. And I know when I'm painting like this and I push through the pain that what I'm doing is worthwhile. But what I came to realize is, but no, we're not violating the Shabbat. You know, we're not, and the reason we're not is that we're not called to save anybody. I'm not here to save you. If you're looking for salvation, go someplace else. There's nothing that I can do that's going to cause you to become part of God's family.
No.
Not our job.
No.
Our job is to listen to what Yahweh had to say. To try to understand what he communicated as accurately and as completely as is possible, and then share what we have learned with those who are interested in listening. And I think we're doing the job the best possible way when we do it like Doe did it. You read Doe's Psalms, he is not accommodating. He is not politically correct. He is not trying to save anybody.
He's not trying to win people, in, you know, which is saying
no,
win, favor and influence people.
Influence people, that's not his thing. He says, I'm going to tell you what's important. I'm going to tell you what I think. I'm going to tell you what I know. I'm going to share with what I understand.
Take it early.
You whatever you want. I don't care what you do with it. But I will tell you that if you are contrary to what I know, if you are in opposition to me or to my God, then you're my enemy. I'm going to tear you to ribbons, verbally. And so, the admonition is, we're not supposed to do the work of the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's nature. He is in the business of adorning us in a garment of life so we appear perfect in God's eyes. She's in the business of a chuddah. We're in the business
of... We can do that at all.
Right. We can do that if we wanted to. Who she is and what she's doing. This is who Yahweh is. What he's offering.
This is what he's offering.
Yep. You can do with it as you please. Now, I know, Kirk, in your case, and we haven't talked about this in the past week. And by the way, I'm sorry that... that you have a fire that's burning down your back again. I fired probably about 50 or 60 miles to the west of you.
Yeah. We had some smoke a while back, but we're in pretty good shape right now. But there's fires going on around California again. It's fire season. Nothing you can do.
Yeah. California is burning up again. You've had a chance to probably spend more time with us, and now you know where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to several people who have now read even the rough drafts, the initial drafts of Mizmor 89. It is transformational.
Yeah. I personally think it's the coolest thing I've ever read.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's the coolest
I really do. If you don't like what God likes, then why you want to spend the rest of eternity with him?
Right.
I mean, come on. He loves this guy. He named him Beloved. He's got a peace out door on either side of his name. You can come in from the right to left, or you can come in from the left to right if you want to be. That's going to sound a little silly, but I mean, everybody is welcome through the peace out door, and his dude is waving the flag. He's the banner. You know, what is hard about this? What does he need?
As a matter of fact, the 89th actually says that Dode will be like the sun
mm-hmm.
before God's
throne. Before Yahweh.
Yeah.
Pretty hot cotton. Yeah. You kidding?
Well, I think that what you said is germane to our understanding. If you want to spend eternity with Yahweh, it's important that you come to appreciate what he likes and come to understand what he dislikes. You know, if you want to embrace what he dislikes, eternity is going to be miserable for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If you love what he likes, eternity is going to be wonderful.
Sure.
Dod is the paradigm for what Yahweh likes. So rather than trying to say, no, we prefer Yosha in that role, isn't it incumbent upon us to understand what has caused Yahweh to fall in love with this man?
Can I interject one thing real quickly?
Sure.
In the very first of the 89th Psalm, and I spent a whole day or whatever time I had that day was many hours on Ezrashi and Ezra. And I looked them up from everything from the roots to the grammar to the this to that, on and on and on, the letters, everything I could think of. And I said, you know, this has got to be bold because everything, meaning of those two words, embodies everything that is bold.
Yeah.
Now, I think you wrote that this, and it doesn't have to be, it's not Dod writing this psalm. It's irrelevant to me whether he wrote the psalm or this guy wrote the psalm. Everything about them, about those names, about points to Dod. So obviously, embrace that which it points to. Embrace what he likes about Dod.
You know, what I think I wrote is, there was a person.
Yeah, there was one in Solomon.
Ethan. Ezraki. There was a person bearing that name. This person is mentioned once, and he was considered to be the second wisest person on earth. The only person that was considered to be wiser at the time was Dod's son, Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
And what I surmise is the same thing you're surmising, that while the psalm may have been inspired by Yahweh and written down by this person, he may have been the first person to sing it, and he was somebody that was a contemporary of Dod, knew Dod, knew Yahweh's relationship with Dod, and therefore could write about Dod. And if Yahweh chose somebody to celebrate this relation with Dod, because Yahweh says some amazing things to Dod that Dod writes in his own hand that are pretty much mind-bending and mind-blowing. Now, I can see how Dod might have blushed a little too much to feel comfortable writing these things. And so he may well have picked a different person to write it, but his name affirms the fact that it was written about Dod. His name means that which is continuous and everlasting, steadfast, always flowing and productive, eternal, permanent, perpetual, enduring, regarding the native-born person and strong arm. Well, Dod, by the way, is the hand of God. You know, if you don't like that, tough. That's what God said. Dod is the hand of God. Dod is the protective shepherd. Dod is the fierce and valiant fighter of God. But Dod is absolutely presented as the strong arm of God.
Mm-hmm.
And forever so. And so this, you're correct. No matter how you look at it, the introduction to the psalm, a poem of insights to contemplate and comprehend on behalf of the continuous and everlasting native-born strong arm. If you're attuned to what God is going to say and has said, the psalm was written for us to appreciate and understand why Yahweh has this continuous and everlasting relationship with a man who is the embodiment of Yahudah, who he announces is his strong arm. So, now it begins as follows. I have chosen to sing about the loyal love, steadfast devotion, enduring favoritism, unfailing mercy, and genuine affection, chesed, of Yahweh, doing so forever on behalf of all generations throughout time. Well, hold the train here, folks.
Mm-hmm.
What is the basis of Christianity that the Torah can't save? That the God of the Torah is mean and cruel, and if you screw up once, you violated the entire thing. That Christianity was needed because, well, the only way to be saved was by the gospel of grace. I'm sorry, but Yahweh takes exactly the opposite view. He inspired this man to say, I've chosen to sing about the loyal love, steadfast devotion, enduring favoritism, unfailing affection, and genuine mercy of Yahweh. And that exists forever throughout all generations and time. What the Christians don't understand is that for God to be loving, he has to hate. And if you do not hate that which is counterproductive and hostile to those you love, you're not protecting them. You're not loving them.
Protecting them, you don't love them.
Right. You know, you have a daughter, JB. If someone were to try to injure your daughter, it is your job not only to protect your daughter, but to expose your absolute wrath towards that person that tried to injure her. You're not trying to love that person. You're trying to win that person over. You should express your absolute and unequivocal loathing for anyone that would harm your wife or daughter. That's what men do. What Yahweh does. What they miss, though, is that for those who embrace the covenant, for those who accept him as he is, Yahweh's love is loyal. His devotion is steadfast. His affection is unfailing. His mercy is genuine. I would have lots of reasons, and maybe you fellows would as well, to consider myself unworthy and unlovable. But that would be really stupid, because that's not God's view of me. And for me to view myself as unlovable, when Yahweh loves me, and always will, is really inappropriate.
Wrong perspective.
Yahweh's mercy is for all people at all time. This did not say God is all loving. It says that his love is loyal. His mercy is genuine. With my mouth, I will make known, yada, your trustworthiness and dependability, your emunah, your honesty and reliability, your steadfast commitment to the truth. Yes, indeed, I say, his eternal and everlasting love, devotion, and genuine mercy will be built up and developed to conceive children and construct a home, Bana. You will authenticate, establish, and sustain your trustworthiness and reliability within the spiritual realms. Those who know Yahweh realize that he is eternally loving and merciful, absolutely and invariably devoted to his family. His affection is everlasting, spanning the eons of time. Yahweh is also trustworthy. It is such a simple concept with such extraordinary implications. Rather than being all-loving, rather than being omnipresent, rather than being omniscient, and thus being totally irrelevant.
Yeah, I was honest.
And by being honest, he's reliable. Nothing is more important, nothing is more valuable to mankind than his steadfast commitment to the truth, along with the tools he has provided for us to independently verify that his words were inspired by being unconstrained by space-time. If this were not true, it would not matter what else he had to say. I wish I had a way of having words pierce people's hearts and minds. This is one of those sentences.
If you say that doesn't pierce your mind, I don't know what will.
If Yahweh were not trustworthy and reliable, it would not matter what else he had to say.
It's just true. I mean, It should go without saying.
It doesn't matter how many promises you make. If you can't honor your promises, your promises are worthless.
Yes.
If you renege on something that you said you're going to do, and you come up with a whole other new scheme, that new scheme is worthless, negating the Christian New Testament, the Talmud, and the Quran.
When it comes to gambling something like your soul, the fate of your soul, 100% accuracy is the only thing that stands. I don't care if you're 90% of the time you keep your word. I'm not going to trust you. Let alone, you take the religious view, it's about what? They talk about five dispensations, so, five times you change your mind? I don't trust you at all.
No. And the fact is, even that 90% number that you get, which is far better than we as humans can achieve.
Yeah.
We're talking about God here. We're talking about the creator of the universe. If God cannot be truthful and reliable 100% of the time.
100%. He's not God.
He's not a being that we should listen to. He's only slightly better than we are. Slightly better is not good enough. God has to be held to an entirely different standard than we hold ourselves.
Yeah.
That's just the fact of the matter. Now, what's
the reason he holds his prophets to that same standard? They have to be 100% right 100% of the time.
Dovereen.
Or else
right.
They're not speaking for him.
Yeah, that's the point I make when I'm evaluating Paul at the end of this chapter. And I absolutely tear Paul to ribbons. In fact, the end of this chapter is far stronger, far more effective at destroying Paul than was the entire book questioning Paul.
Right.
It just absolutely obliterates him. And it obliterates him just on two statements. Now, what follows is profound. God equates Dode, the beloved, with the covenant. And he unequivocally states that Dode is La Bashir, the chosen one. It affirms that Yahweh Shabbat swore an oath to Dode.
Yeah.
Because Dode is the one that God chose to work through. And that's important because Yahweh never reneges on a promise, a realization that he's going to make irrefutable. This statement reads, I have established, Karat, I have cut, the Bereth covenant, the family and home, with my chosen one, Labashirani, on behalf of, according to, and for the individual I have personally decided upon. I have sworn an oath to Dode, my authorized agent who works on my behalf. Over. You know, we had a really brilliant physician and scientist. I believe his first name was Roy. That left our company over this issue. The idea that that Yosha isn't mentioned by name in a single prophecy, and that Dode is the focus of prophecy, was too much for him to take. But I'm here to tell you, it isn't appropriate for you to get mad at me for doing so, for stating that. It's not my opinion. It's not my conclusion. It wasn't my choice. I'm simply revealing what God said. I don't have a problem if you don't like me because I'm trying to be consistent with what God said. That's okay. Free will and all. But this is what God has made abundantly clear. By stating, I have established the Bereth Covenant, the family and our home. Yahweh has affirmed the purpose of creation and the reason for our existence. God wants to enjoy life's greatest blessing, raising a family and interacting with his children. Our Heavenly Father's gift to us is also his reward. From this perspective, everything Yahweh says and does makes perfect sense, including elevating Dode, David, over Yahusha, Yah saves, the diminished manifestation of himself. Now, by stating La Bashir Ani, with my chosen one, Yahweh has affirmed the existence of free will, and he has acknowledged his desire for our lives. He has affirmed that free will works both ways. Yahweh can choose whomever he wishes to be part of his family, just as we are free to express our desire to be adopted therein. In harmony with this paradigm, our Heavenly Father is reinforcing something about the relationship that we've known but few appreciate. In almost every case, God initiates contact, choosing the individuals he wants to be part of his family. You know, so I rather like the idea of being part of an organization with a person who chooses, the individual who chooses its members, mm-hmm. as absolutely impeccable judgment.
Good to be recruited.
It's not only nice to be recruited. You know, I always, you know, there's all that line, why would I want to be part of an organization that could choose me?
Yeah.
That was always the line. We always second guess human organizations and the way they go about making their choices. But here, the person making the invitations, writing out the invitations, is the creator of the universe. I think he's got pretty impeccable judgments.
Yeah.
If God says, you know, that guy or gal is going to be a delight to spend eternity with, I think he knows what he's talking about. I think I'm going to find a way to get along with and enjoy the company of everybody that he has chosen to be part of his family.
You know, I was thinking about it earlier. We were talking about, you know, eternity and, you know, who you spend here. I don't know if you ever had it when you were a kid, when your parents tried to force you to hang out with some kid and you had nothing in common. And it was just hours of misery because you're just bored out of your mind because you share nothing in common with this kid. Who would want that for eternity?
Miserable.
I mean, it was miserable for a couple of hours when I was a kid. I can't imagine eternity with someone that I have nothing in common with.
You know, my father was abusive. I don't want to spend eternity with him.
No.
My ex was demeaning, abusive, verbally. I don't want to spend eternity with him. I don't like religious people. I don't want to spend eternity with them. I don't like overtly political people. I don't want to spend eternity with them. I'm uncomfortable around people who are militaristic and just love authority, whether they be police, Justice Department, or the military.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spend eternity with them. Now, Yana was not asking my opinion as to who gets in and who gets out, so is left out. So, you know, if you happen to be in those categories, don't worry. My opinion doesn't matter. But fortunately, Yahweh's does matter. And he didn't like those things either.
The more you align what you enjoy with Yahweh, with what Yahweh enjoys, the happier you're going to be in eternity. And if you're 100% aligned, you're going to be ecstatic. And I don't think you're going to be there if you're not 100% aligned.
The more we're aligned with Yahweh's thinking and perspective, the more enjoyable this life is, too.
Yeah.
One way or another, Yahweh reaches out to individuals along life's way and introduces himself. How we respond and reciprocate determines our future. Further, since we know that Dode was off tending sheep in Bethlehem and walked to Shamuel when called, he had left his father's house, just as Abraham had walked away from the cultural, religious, and political milieu of Babylon. We can safely extrapolate from Dode to ourselves, because Yahweh's statements about Dode reveal that he is the living embodiment of the covenant. That's the same covenant, with the same conditions and benefits that Yahweh presented in Bereshit Genesis, devoting much of the text to how it was developed with Abraham. It is the same covenant Yahweh codified, designating its stipulations and allowances through Moshe and the rest of the Torah. And it's the same covenant that was affirmed with Yishak and Yaakov. So by pointing this out, our Heavenly Father is simply acknowledging that Dode is part of the same family, his family. Through this affirmation, Yahweh was saying that Dode personifies the qualities he values. As a result, we can enhance our standing with God, indeed our value to God, by applying what Dode wrote to our lives. You can apply what Dode has said to your life with guaranteed positive results. Try to find somebody else that you can do that with. It is so uncommon for God to swear an oath to men when he says, Shabbadod, I have sworn a binding promise and I will always affirm the truth of this statement to Dode. Now pay attention. So they come to understand the dynamics behind his calculus, and we benefit from the answer. And on this occasion, we don't have to look beyond the next word, because Yahweh presents Dode as Ebed. I know that English Bibles want to render Ebed as servant, but the word is indistinguishable in the text from Abad. And Abad means to work. So an Abed is an associate. It's a co-worker. It is someone who works with and on behalf of someone. Dode worked on behalf of Yahweh. We're not in Dode's league. Don't want to be in Dode's league. But it doesn't change the fact that we're still working with Yahweh. Every time that you take the time to understand what God is saying and share it with someone, you're working on behalf of God.
Now, I don't have a problem with being translated as servant. I don't have a problem being a servant of God. You know, I'm a servant to the district I work for. I work
with
these
people. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a negative connotation. You know, it just means you serve. I worked many years as a waiter. I was a servant. I served people. I had no problem doing that. And serving God, what greater thing can you do?
Yeah, my only issue with it
is if I can be a servant to God, I'm doing good.
Okay. I have no issue with any of us serving God. My issue is that we would never refer to our own children as servants.
No, that's true.
My issue is that God is in the business of lifting us up and elevating us, of inviting us into his home as his children. The thing that gives a father great pleasure is when a son is about the father's business. And so it's just instinctual to me that since Dod is Yahweh's beloved son, that Dod is someone that Yahweh Abad enjoys working with and through.
So co-worker is better.
Yeah, so I understand your approach, JB. And quite frankly, I have no qualms with trying to serve Yahweh's interests. I just think that...
But in the familial context, that doesn't seem to fit.
The concept doesn't fit. So,
yeah, that's why context is
key. That's why I don't render it as servant. And I understand that I'm bucking tradition to do that. But I'm keen on looking at words prior to their corruption by the Masoretes. And there is absolutely no distinction between Ebed and Abad. None.
Yeah.
In the original
exact
text.
Same.
And Abad means to work with.
Exact same three letters.
Yep. Now, rather than imposing himself upon his creation, God works with us and through us, patiently, parentally. He prepares his children such that we can be about our Father's business. It is one of the most remarkable and endearing aspects of his nature. Yahweh choosing to walk into Mitzrayim with a broken down 80-year-old man who stuttered is endearing. It's lovable. It tells us so much about who he is and what he's trying to achieve. The fact that there were lots of big, powerful, tall, handsome men in Israel. Shaul being the most appealing of them. And God said, no, that young boy over there, the shepherd, that's the one I want. Tells you a lot about it. It's very endearing. What makes that so damn approachable? So lovable. I mean, yeah, he's the creator of the universe, but you feel like you could curl up at his feet, give him a hug, and say, hey, let's go out and play. You know, once upon a time, I had the ability to spend lots of time with my granddaughter. And one thing she would say to me all the time, Papa, do you want to play with me? And I think that's the nature of the God that I know, that wants to work with people and through people. He wants his children to say, Papa, do you want to play with me?
Play with me.
Why was the first round of the covenant being?
She hasn't quite got the question part of it down. It's more in the tone. She just says, Daddy, play with me?
Yeah.
It's not really you. It's just play with me. And it's in the tone, but it's like, yes, let's go.
Yes. Exactly. So that's a lot from six words.
Mm-hmm.
Six words. Now, recognizing that in Hebrew, pronouns, prepositions, and conjunctions are integral to the verbs and nouns, let's see what we can learn from the next six words. I will establish. I will appoint, prepare, develop, support, and sustain your offspring and that which you sow as an eternal witness at Olam. In addition, I will construct a home for your throne and a seat of honor on behalf of all generations throughout time. Who's he speaking about? Who's you?
Family.
Dode. No, it's Dode.
Dode.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He said Dode.
Sorry, he said
what does the last one say? The last statement. I have established a covenant
with
the family and home with my chosen one. I have sworn an oath to Dode, my authorized agent who works on my behalf. And so what he's saying is, I will establish your offspring, Dode, that which you sow, Dode, as an eternal witness. In addition, I will construct a home for your throne, for your seat of honor, on behalf of all generations throughout all time. Think of that. This is the creator of the universe, and he says, I am going to construct a home for your throne. Speaking of a man, that's the antithesis of God the way that man conceives them. How many idiots out there throughout time have sought to construct houses of God? There's millions of them.
Mm-hmm.
The real God says, no, no, no. You got it all wrong. Don't build me a house. I'm the Father. It's my job, my pleasure, my opportunity, my responsibility
to take care of you.
A house. Yeah. You know, fathers don't conceive sons for the father to say, hey, kid. Stop babbling.
What have you done for me lately?
Nursing. Build me a house. No. If you're going to have children as a father, it's your responsibility. It's your great opportunity to build a home on behalf of your children. To raise them. To elevate their seat of honor. In that case of Dode. It's just we're talking about God is dad, and the seat of honor is for all time. But think of this. A man has God building a home for him and establishing his throne, his seat of honor for all time. Huh. That's extraordinary.
That's relatable. That makes sense.
We have every reason to suspect that both aspects, the verbal and the noun of Zera, which is sowing seed and offspring, were intended. And that one invariably leads to the other when the seeds are properly tended and cultivated. As such, we'd be wise to consider both Dode's life and his lyrics because they lead to the same amazing place. Paul tried to relegate Dode to nothing more than a sperm donor. But it's what Dode has sown that is so much more valuable than the product of his sperm. Zerah is the fulcrum upon which Shaul's perversions rise and fall. As the Hebrew word for seed and seed, it can be accurately translated offspring, children, descendants, posterity, family, and progeny. That's as a noun. As a verb, Zera speaks of sowing seed, both literally and symbolically. And it is from the verbal implication of sowing seed that we come to appreciate the fact, as is the case in English, to seed is to plant many seeds, just as a bag of seed contains hundreds, if not thousands of them. In spite of the obvious plural connotations of seed and of offspring, descendants, posterity, and children, Paul claimed that the Torah could be ignored because Jesus Christ was the promised seed, singular, of Abraham and Job. In his twisted mind, nothing mattered before, during the interim time, or since Jesus Christ was born. According to Paul, everything God had to say could be ignored by those who put their faith in this assessment of seed. Now, validating our earlier acknowledgement that the seeds of Dode that he had sown through his lyrics were as important as the offspring he brought into the covenant family. Yahweh said that he has made Dode an auto long, an eternal witness. If the verbal implications of Zerah were not implied, then he would not have said that he made Dode an Adolam, eternal witness. Olam means forever. Ad, testimony, witness. Such that his seed and what he sows will bana, be developed into a family and home. I love the word bana. Bana is just such an interesting word. It is son with a feminine ending. I just love it. You would think that daughter in Hebrew would be bana, wouldn't you? But it isn't.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But Ben is son. The ah makes it feminine. That's a wonderful term. And so you're going to build a family, you build it. What do you start with? If you're a guy, you've got to have a feminine influence. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have children. That's what Bana is all about. That's what it conveys. Bana speaks of developing children into a family and building a home. On behalf of Dor. Dor wasn't written once, generation. And you could have read Dor plural, but no. Yahweh repeated the term. When you repeat a term in Hebrew, it takes it to an exponential power. So, Dor, every generation, throughout all time. His testimony was not replaced by Yahusha. In fact, it's the other way around. Because with his dying breath, Yahusha, go to the opening line of Dode's 22nd Mizmor. It's so obvious that Yahusha did not replace Dode. How is it you can't figure it out that it's the other way around? Literally, with his dying breath, Yahusha quoted the opening line of Dode's 22nd Mizmor. If Yahusha quoted Dode, then you tell me who is speaking the word of God.
Case closed.
Now, if I may return to the heart of the 89th Mizmor. The realization that Yahweh is constructing a home for his son, Dode, is absolutely essential. The most essential thing to our understanding of Yahweh and his relationship with us. Nothing is more important than coming to appreciate that God has the responsibility and the joy and the capability and the desire to build a home for his children. I do not have the responsibility. I do not have the desire. I do not have the capability of building a home for God. It's not innate in our roles. I'm kid, he's dad. We're the children, he's the father. I'm telling you, there is nothing more important than understanding that that is the principal theme of the 89th Mizmor. It is the explanation for 2 Samuel 7 that we return to time and time again trying to understand. It's all about who's building the home for whom and why. In the manner of a father, and in defiance of humanly conceived God, our Heavenly Father is declaring that he is taking personal responsibility for raising and protecting and indeed advocating on behalf of and lifting up his son. And what he has accomplished for Dode through the covenant, he will do for us. Once we grasp this fundamental truth, rather than attempt the impossible and lift God up, we ought to let him do what he has made possible. Our needs and his desire for our lives coalesce when we allow him to lift us up. The purpose of the Torah's guidance, it's the reason the covenant exists. Hey, is one of the benefits of the covenant that we build a home for God? Is one of the benefits of the covenant we make God immortal? Is one of the benefits of the covenant that we make God perfect? One of the benefits of the covenant is we can adopt God into our family? Is one of the benefits of the covenant that we can empower and enrich God? Are all of the benefits of the covenant the opposite of that?
Yeah, we do benefit, you know, God does benefit and increase by having a relationship with us, so he benefits from it in that regard too, but no, those are the benefits for us.
Sure, he benefits.
And why would he engage if he didn't?
Correct. But he benefits because he has done all those things for us, not because we have done any of those things for him. All we do that causes him to benefit is accept. Take the time to know, understand, agree with, accept, and engage in the terms and conditions that he laid out. All we do. Once we grasp this fundamental truth, rather than attempt the impossible and lift God up, we ought to let him do what he has made possible. Our needs and his desire for our lives coalesce. It all works out when we allow him to do exactly what he is offering, which is to lift us up. With this understanding, how is it that after creating this entire universe for us to enjoy, we humans are so full of ourselves that we have built not one, but hundreds of thousands of houses for God. Arrogant. It's stupid. Completely ineffectual. As the psalmist says, the law, pause now and contemplate the implications. Now, I was doing this very thing.
Great word.
Pause me. Yeah, I love that word. It caused me to reconsider the prophecy upon which my curiosity with and later devotion to Yahweh's testimony began. And when we do, we find that there are some amazing parallels between this, the 89th Mizmor, and the perplexing narrative found in Shamuel, listen to him, 2 Samuel, including the fact that they are both devoted to teaching us that Yahweh is responsible for building a home for his family and not the other way around. So now that we have come to know so much more about Dode, and realizing that we're about to confront his adversary, the son of evil, let's go back to where it all began. Nearly a score of years ago. Speaking of homes. Speaking of homes. Speaking of building homes. Of man's and God's. We read. And it came to pass when the king, this would be Dode, sat down and relaxed in his home, because Yahweh had given him a universal and comforting respite from his adversary, that the king said to Nathan, meaning bestowed as a gift, the prophet, please look around. I live in a house of cedar. But the ark of God sits within curtains. So Nathan said to the king, choose to travel around and engage in all that is in your best judgment for Yahweh. Wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
So then that evening, it came to be that the word of Yahweh came to Nathan. Convey. Go and tell Dode, my co-worker, that this is what Yahweh says. Why should you build me a home to live in? Indeed, I have not lived in any house since the time that I lifted the children of Israel out of the crucibles of oppression and Mitzrayim, even into this day. I have existed walking about in a tent dwelling. Anywhere along the way that I have journeyed with the children of Israel, did I say a single word to any of the tribes of Israel, my people? Yisrael, whom I fed, asking, why not build me a house out of cedar? I just love God's sense of humor.
Mm. Now, if I wanted one, don't you think I could have one?
Yeah. Why not build me a house out of cedar? Did I ever say that once? Now, therefore, say to my associate, though, this is what Yahweh, the spiritual implement, says. I took you from the sheepfolds, from chasing after sheep, to be the leader over my people, Yisrael. And I have been with you wherever you traveled. I have cut off all of your enemies, removing them from your sight. And I have made your name great, comparable to the greatest name on earth. Furthermore, I will appoint a place for my people, Yisrael, and I will plant them there, that they may dwell in this place of their own and never have to move again. Neither shall the son of evil afflict them anymore.
There he is.
As he will have done previously. And since the time that I instructed the judges in conjunction with my people, Yisrael, I have created for you a respite from all of your enemies. Additionally, Yahweh boldly and publicly announced to you that he will act, engaging with you to create a family and home. And so when your days are fulfilled and you lay around with your fathers, I will establish your seed after you from that which shall come from inside of your testicles, from your very core. And so I will erect his kingdom. He shall build a home for my name. And I will set up a place of honor of his kingdom forever. I will be his father. And he shall be my son. Then when that which is perverted and twisted is associated with him, I will correctly reciprocate on his behalf with the scepter and rod of mortal men, and with the infliction of the children of Adam. But my love and mercy shall never depart from him, as I took it from Shaul, though I am cast away from your very presence. Moreover, your house, your family, and kingdom will remain eternally trustworthy and true, forever right in your presence. Your throne and place of honor shall be established forevermore. Consistent with all of these words and everything within this revelation, Nathan correctly conveyed them to Doubt Shamwell. Listen to him. 7:1 through 17. Now this prophecy is about houses, about who built them, and who lives in them. It is about Doubt, not Jesus, and what God is going to do for, with, and through his beloved Son. And when it comes to houses, Yahweh is beside himself, annoyed to the point that he has made his point in such a vivid way. There shouldn't have been a single church, mosque, or temple, not a shrine, called a house of God. And yet, men have erected millions of them. Just as God never once asked us to worship him, bow down before him, or pray to him, he does not want us building houses for him. The fact is, Yahweh is in the construction business. His primary expertise is in building the most extraordinary home in the universe for his covenant family. He can't wait to share it with us. From this perspective, in this story of a father's devotion to his son, the transition from you to he in the midst of what has subsequently been categorized as 2 Samuel 7:11 seems to rightly infer that you has been Doubt and that he has become Doubt's son. Christians, however, have inserted their Jesus in this place. Even though Yosha did not come from a seed or a sperm that emanated from inside Doubt's manhood, nullifying the prophecy. And had he literally and genetically been conceived from the distant legacy of Doubt's semen, then Yosha could not have been born of a virgin, as Christians wrongly assert. Further, Yahweh was responsible for Solomon's kingdom and did not do likewise for Yosha. It was Solomon who built the house for Yahweh's name that God has been specifically addressing all along. Curiously, at her round to this point, the identity of the he of whom Yahweh has been addressing in his prophetic revelation through Nathan shifts, seemingly returning to Doubt. This conclusion isn't conjecture, but factually derived, since Doubt undeniably represents the him to whom Shaul was removed in 2 Samuel 7:15. And in the 16th statement, we are back to you being Doubt, and of Yahweh talking to Doubt through his prophet Nathan. The fact is, Doubt clearly recognized that this was all about him, as is evident throughout his subsequent discussion with Yahweh, as it's recorded in 2 Samuel 7:18, all the way through 29. It serves as a celebration of Doubt's place of honor and relationship with God. Now, having returned to the prophecy, where my journey began 18 years ago with Asher, associated with him, 2 Samuel 7:14, we're left to ponder the implications of the pronouns and predictions, especially now that we're aware that God is addressing the role of a father with regard to his son. So may I suggest that Solomon was simply an extension of Doubt, as the text affirms, and thus a blend of his father's best and worst traits. It was the Doubt in him that caused Yah to build his kingdom, with the son being about his father's business. Likewise, it was the father and the son who built the home for Yahweh's name. And thus it remains Doubt, whose place of honor and kingdom will endure forever, as is affirmed throughout the prophets. further. It is of Dod whom Yahweh has said, he is my son and I am his father. Something the 89th Mizmor will also reiterate. And that is why we were drawn back to this place, to the passage which was incorrectly translated in every English Bible without exception. Every variation claimed that if or when he sent, that God would see to it that he was punished with the rod of men. Now, at the time, I realized that Asher was either wrongly translated or that this statement could not apply to Yahusha, that Jesus and his Christians had rejected. After all, if or when Yahusha sinned, he would have been chastised as a result of his own failings and thus not ours, negating his ability to serve as the perfect and unblemished Passover lamb. At the same time, I thought I'd resolve the issue by more correctly rendering Asher as is associated with, based upon its relational qualities. But other conflicts still remain. For example, Yahweh has not, and according to him, will not establish a kingdom for Yahusha. Yahusha walked into the house that Herod the Edomite had constructed for his name, one that would soon be torn down by his sponsor, Rome. It was the opposite of what's being presented here. We're not building houses, we're tearing them down. Moreover, Yahusha was first and foremost the Pesach El. He was only mockingly called the King of Israel by Rome, never by God. Moreover, there is a reason Yahusha consistently referred to himself as the Son of Man rather than the Son of God. He was born of men, coming through the line of Dod. It was the Spirit who established the father-son relationship with Yahusha, just as she had done previously with them.
Yeah, a long time ago, this was way before I ever came to know Yahweh, but it was a line I heard that stuck with me. It was a rabbi being interviewed. I don't remember the context, but the way he described Christianity was Christians threw a dart, hit Jesus, and then started connecting prophecies to him to draw the bullseye around him. And going through what we've been going through lately and finding all these prophecies that are about Dod and not Yahusha even, I think more and more, that rabbi was right. Christians have started taking all these prophecies and finding some way to connect it to their Jesus, and it became accepted over time. But so many of them don't fit. And this is just a perfect example where, as you said, even you thought this was it, you made it fit, it worked, and then you learned more. And now you're going, wait, no, this isn't about Yahusha, even. This is about Dod.
No, I think the rabbi was correct. And I don't think it happened by accident. I'm quite certain that the reason that Christians began scratching out Dod's name and replacing it with Jesus every time Dod is mentioned in a prophet is because that's what Paul did.
Yeah.
That's just what Paul did. And Paul's attempt at it is so late. He is so obviously lying that it's appalling that anyone believes it. And his attempts at doing it are absolutely, utterly, and totally pathetic. And so are all of the Christian attempts to do it. It's as if they're saying, our God is so dumb that he doesn't know the difference between Yahusha's name and Dod's name. He can't keep his name straight. There's no wonder we call him by the wrong name. He doesn't even know.
He doesn't know names.
His own name. Unbelievably.
I love your point, though, that if Yahusha is descended of David, then he's not virgin born.
Correct.
So if he's heads I win, tails you lose.
Now,
there's
fact
so many of these situations like that when it comes to religion.
He wasn't virgin born.
No.
But if they claim that prophecy is about their Jesus, it says that the seed is coming from his testicle. I'm sorry. That would negate your
virgin birth.
You can have one or the other, but you can't have both.
Can't have it both ways.
You can if you're Paul. You just keep moving west, further and further west, away from anybody that knows the Torah. You say whatever you
want. We all know that when religious perversions and political corruptions were associated with Yosha, his physical body died as a result of it, while he was serving as the Passover lamb. And his soul, or more correctly, the nefesh of Yahweh, burdened with these human offenses, endured Matzah and Sheol, so that we wouldn't suffer the same thing. But in Sheol, Yahweh's nefesh was harassed, as Dode revealed in Mizmor 22 and 88, by demonic beings, not by the rods of mortal men, nor the influence of the sons of Adam. But this did happen to Dode. Dode made some poor choices, not the least of which was sending Uriah off to near certain death so that he could take his wife. And he suffered for it, with the rod and scepter of mortal men, and the inflictions of the son of Adam. His firstborn son died on the seventh day. His eldest surviving son raped his daughter. His third son murdered the firstborn to avenge the rape of his sister. Then that same son, Absalom, led a coup d'etat and wrenched the kingdom away from his father. When the son was killed during a counterattack, Dode wept for all that had transpired. Even worse, when Dode chose to have his people suffer rather than personally endure a few years on the run, thousands died. From a broader perspective, all of the things and far worse happened to Yisrael as a result of the people's contribution to perverting and corrupting the Word of God. More than any nation or ethnicity, God's people have suffered from the rods and scepters of mortal men and from the infliction of the sons of Adam. In other words, God's fair. Acting justly, even in the case of his beloved son and his chosen people. There would be consequences for bad decisions, just as there would be an enduring reward for being right, such as the nature of a father-son relationship. And it is from this perspective that we should review and consider the prophecy recorded in 2 Samuel 7, as well as what we will find to be an abrupt transition from benefits to consequences between the 37th and 38th statements in Mizmor 89. It is the proper viewpoint to consider the fact that Dode, the living embodiment of the covenant, is also the exemplar for all that is good and bad with Yisrael. This may even be the best perspective in which to view our own relationship with Yahweh, in the here and now and forever, considering that which has been and that which will be. Now, along these lines, I want to reinforce something that I think is equally germane to our understanding of 2 Samuel 7, as it is to appreciating Mizmor 89, both of which celebrate the father-son relationship paramount to the life of the king of Israel. Dode exemplifies and represents more than one individual man. Perhaps more than even Jacob, Dode is Yisrael. His joys and heartaches, his ongoing battles with Goyim, his insights and confusion, the benefits enjoyed by Dode in concert with the covenant, and the consequences he endured when he ran afoul of it, are all shared with the nation he shepherds. After this brief intermission, one instructed by the text of the Mizmor itself, we can return to the voice of the psalmist, and we will continue this in a week from now, but this portion of the psalm that we're going to consider was written to counter the absurd notion that the gods of men, such as Adonai, the Lord, Hashem, Allah, Jesus, are somehow analogous and comparable to Yahweh. Mankind's gods were either modeled after the men who created them, or afforded characteristics which were sufficiently fearsome to command obedience, or they were compiled by blending a plethora of seemingly plausible yet irrational notions together. This is an interesting episode, and in this psalm is the psalmist draws a distinction between the real God and the fake ones. It's something that we should understand when countering that notion. We all worship the same God.
Hardly. We don't worship at all.
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. So, fellas, I'm sorry I talked a lot. This is the
very enlightening and very interesting.
I'll share one quick line with you. Quick lines with you.
Yeah.
Israel chose Shemuel, and he reigned for 40 years.
Yeah.
Goyim chose Shaul, and he rules now. By the time it's over, he's going to rule for 40 Yobels. Every time, y'all said, I chose Dode. So if you're on the wrong side of this fence, your life is over.
So,
maybe that should be my new bumper sticker. Don't blame me. I voted for Dode.
Yes, don't blame me. I voted for Dode.
I'll buy one.
I call this chapter to Dode or not to Dode.
I like that, too.
It's just to Dode or not to Dode. It's your call. I'm going to tell you what God said. I'm going to tell you what Paul wrote. And I'm going to cop an attitude. It's true. I'm going to cop an attitude. I can't help it. I'm disgusted by Paul. I think Paul is the lowest form of life in the history of the planet. But you know, I know I've been accused of it, but I really don't have a romance with Dode. I really don't. My fascination with him is that I think his lyrics are brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the smartest dude who ever lived. I'm totally fascinated by God's relationship with him. And since I want more than just the enjoyment and fulfillment and satisfaction of being adopted into God's family, with the opportunity and time we have left, I'd like to do as much as I can to please God, you know, to be about his business.
Mm-hmm.
To make a contribution that has a meaningful and enduring impact. And so the more I know about why Yahweh chose to work with Dode, why he chose to say all these things, mark magnificent things about Dode, and the better prepared I am to make myself useful.
Right? Makes sense. I'm putting it this way. In a positive way, I am envious of Dode. I seek to have that kind of relationship. So I look to what he did and how he did it, and, you know, that's what I strive for. It's a goal.
The only difference between you and me in this case, I'm not envious of them. I don't want what Dode has been given. I don't want responsibility.
Right, no, I don't want that. But I want the relationship
Dode,
he had.
Yeah, Dode,
I want to understand and know the way he understood and knew.
You know, to spend 16 hours a day, like I have these past few days, writing, it's a great joy. It's a wonderful thing. But I don't really have any responsibility. I have no accountability. I'm just doing it as a labor of love. Dode has serious responsibility, serious accountability. And I wouldn't want it. I am delighted that he embraced it, that he had the backbone and the fortitude to deal with it. I am delighted that he chose to share every nuance of it with us. But no, I'm as happy that Yahweh loves Dode as I am happy that I'm not Dode.
Yeah. Definitely in that regard. I want his intellect. I'm envious of his intellect.
Wouldn't you love to have his intellect? Yeah. I would.
Yeah, that's where my envy is. I wish I was that smart. I got it that well.
All right, but let me share something with you. Yeah, we know that Dode was flawed. He made a lot of mistakes.
Yes.
That's part of what makes him endearing. That's part of what makes him the perfect example. Because we can follow Dode because, yeah, he wasn't perfect, and we're not perfect. And so it all works out. Possible. Comfortable. Not intimidating at all. But there are lots of things where Dode says something really profound and says, whoa, that is really astonishing. But there's lots of things that Dode doesn't say that we have come to know. And I think that if Dode knew them the way that we knew them, he would have shared them.
Well, he couldn't. It's 3,000 years ago.
Yeah,
have science background and all that stuff. So,
the scientific accuracy of the creation account, he probably didn't grasp.
No,
Moshe didn't get it.
But
Moshe didn't get it.
I don't think Dode had a full appreciation for Yahweh's timeline and no reason for him to know it.
Yeah, why? Why would he?
Yeah. That's a good point.
Now, this is a great time to be.
There's lots of things. You know, Dode never wrote for 5 terms and conditions, the covenant's 5 benefits. He didn't specify what each of the Moed Mikre represent.
He lived it.
He didn't say that we know from all time how to pronounce Yahweh's name based upon Torah and Shalom. He didn't say that. There's lots of things that he did not say that we've come to understand. He didn't go out of his way to say that the Ruach Kodesh is the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's nature. He didn't say that, you know, there's 3 destinations for human souls, and here's why that is so. There are lots of things that we've been able to deduce from the totality of Yahweh's words, given the perspective that we have and the tools that we have to work with, that have given us insights that are consistent with what Dode came to understand, but in some cases even go beyond what he shared.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I hadn't thought about it.
We've been careful that he wrote, you know. We're standing in an elevated position based upon what he wrote, for sure. That was the intent. And this is not a competition.
There was the saying, you know, if I've seen far, it's because I stood on the shoulders of giants. Dode is one of the giants whose shoulders we get to stand on.
Correct. Correct. And the view from on top of those shoulders is better than the view from beneath.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. You know, Dode learned from Moshe. It wasn't a competition between Dode and Moshe. But Dode benefited from what Moshe had written. And then Dode augmented it with the inspiration he was given by Yahweh. And we get the benefit of both of them. Plus Yashayah. Plus Yirmiyah. Plus Zechariah.
Elijah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's been set up in such a way that rather than us demeaning Dode by saying there's things that we know that he did not know or at least did not share, Dode would be the first to celebrate. Hey, that's good. I am glad. That's really exciting. He'd be right there saying, darn right, that's true. Good catch. That's smart. I like that. It's what I experience when I'm reading someone, you know, I'll send off a chapter, I'll send off, write a letter to somebody, and I'll get feedback, and somebody will say something I had never even thought of, but that was an extrapolation, a conclusion based upon what we've come to learn. And, you know, all you can say is you're right, and thanks for sharing it. And my reaction is never, well, darn, how come they got to know that and it didn't come to me first? It's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
What a wonderful situation to be in, that those that are learning along with you are receiving insights. Like, you know, you sent out some translations earlier this week, JB, on your conclusions and rolling back the diacritical marks of the Masoretes that were insightful and brilliant. I didn't say, well, you know, I'm not jealous that you conceived them. I'm excited, thrilled.
Yeah. We're all on the same journey, and we're trying to help each other, and we all grow together.
Yep, exactly. You know, Dod will be our king, but he's also our brother.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah. You know what? Even in eternity, he's going to work with us and through us. And so the person he's going to work through the most is Dod. And works for me.
Yeah. Better him.
And, you know, I had originally thought that the people I want to get to know initially are the people Yahweh inspired. You know, like for the first time I want to get to know is Dod or Elia. I just love Elia's attitude and approach. but that's no longer the case. It's those I've gotten to know in the here and now. That's the people I want to go off and explore with. I want us to grow and share and be excited together. And so it just speaks of the nature of this family. I really don't feel that Yashaya or Elia or Hosha or Moshe or Dod or Abraham were privileged beyond what we are.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're any more interesting than you guys are. I really don't. I think we're all part of the same family. And we grow and have fun together. Now, there is a hierarchy. He's king of kings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No question.
Glad it's him, not me. I've flown the bird cast before. I don't like the job. And I've been CEO of several public companies. I don't ever want to do it again. And that's small potatoes compared to trying to herd deer around. I've been the sweetest possible way. But, you know, I have an English lab. Labradors are from England, and mine's actually bred to be an English lab. But I don't call her English lab anymore. But she's a Jewish lab. She doesn't always come when you call her. She's a little over, fixated on her own, on herself. She thinks she's way too clever. You know, she's a little full of herself. And constant attitude, very stubborn. And so I say, you know, I've got the first ever Jewish lab.
I don't know, that sounds a lot like my lab.
Too damn smart for her own. And it doesn't always come when you call her. Now, right now, my Jewish lab is curled up around my feet, as she does every Shabbat, listening to the show. And she is sweet as she can be. She's pure love, and I love her. But she does have some Jewish tendencies.
Hmm.
right. And I say that with a big heart and a big smile. You know, one of the things that I read here is that, you know, I was translating stuff that Paul said where he was twisting it. And one of the things talks about this singular goy that's going to engage, according to Yeshaya, to call Yisrael back home. And it says that one of the responsibilities that are the opportunities that this fella has, this goy and this mission, is restoring the honor and respect, the dignity of Yisrael. And so I just want to be really careful when I'm saying this. It's true that Jews don't often always respond to God's call. And it's true that Jews have been a little, you know, stiff-necked and strong-willed, a little too smart for their own good. All that's true, but I'm saying it in the nicest possible way because God loves them. They are the chosen people. And it is essential to God and those of us who work with him to restore the honor and dignity of Israel that has been taken away from the chosen people by the likes of Paul and Christianity.
You're here.
Yep.
Absolutely.
All right, fellas. Well, we've gone a full half an hour past. So the nice thing about me calling the guest line, I don't even get to hear the chimes. 1 minute.
You're trying to talk. Close you off a bit.
Yeah, ignorance is bliss. But nonetheless, I look forward to picking up where we left off last week. This news board just gets better and better and better.
This is great.
And I really do think that we've come to a point where we're actually going to find some pleasure at the end of the chapter around right around page 40 is where it begins, goes to 50-something, rebuking Paul. I think that you're going to be shocked. I was shocked, angry, which is how deliberate Paul was in not only misquoting God and stating the opposite of what God said, but how obvious it was and how just shameful it is that with it being this obvious, that there are 3 billion people on the planet that believe. And in just analyzing two of Paul's speeches, I didn't even need to go to Romans, just analyzing the speech that Paul gave that is recorded in Acts 13. Early in his career as scumbag, everything the guy says is twisted. Everything he says is counter to the word of God. He is unequivocally and obviously an imposter.
And knows it. He has to.
And he knows it. Yeah, he knows it. Yeah, there's no question that what he's doing is deliberate. He is deliberately playing the role of imposter.
And people choose him.
Yep. He's in deep. He knew that he was Satan's messenger, and he has simply positioned Satan as the god of his religion, as one twisted evil man.
Mm-hmm.
But God got his title right. God gave him three titles, at least three that I have found so far. He calls him the father of lies, the son of devil, and the plague of hell.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a trinity.
Well, if you read the Torah, what can you possibly
and your actual name is equivalent to the place of eternal incarceration.
Separation, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. That's not a good resume. You had nothing, man. You had nothing.
That is really bad. All right, fellas. I wish you the best. We're going to be cut off anyway here in the next minute. So,
Shabbat shalom, both of y'all.
Shabbat shalom. Good night.
Talk to you guys next week. Hello.
Okay, bud.
Bye.